You're listening to a free download from the BBC of The Verb, Radio 3's Cabaret of the Word, with me, Ian McMillan. Welcome to The Verb at Glastonbury, the last programme of the current series. And if you're about to write a poem for our Proms Poetry Competition, inspired by what you've just heard on the first night here on Radio 3, or you think you might like to over the summer, then this is the programme for you. I'm making my way to the spoken word end of the vast city-state that is this festival to get tips on how to write to order, how to write poems infused with a musical sensibility, and how to surmount writer's block and treat all those imposters just the same. And hey, look, there's Jeremy Corbyn coming onto the pyramid stage.
We achieve inspiration through lots of things. In every child there is a poem, in every child there's a painting, in every child there is music. And you know what? As people get older, they get a bit embarrassed about that. Ooh, can't be thinking that sort of thing, can't be writing poetry. No! I want all our children to be inspired, all our children to have the right to learn music, to write poetry, and to paint in the way that they want. And this festival...
Thanks, Jeremy. And no, I won't be embarrassed, because, as it happens, this festival is giving me that very opportunity. I've promised myself and anybody else who will listen that I'll write a poem inspired by what I find here, to be performed at the end of the day at Glastonbury's legendary Poetry and Words tent.
Funny French people squirting each other with hoses. There's a thing, must be an old Glastonbury tradition. Here we are in the Field of Avalon. Oh, we've been trying to get here for years. The Avalon Cafe. Everything free, perhaps. There, of course, is a badger made out of twigs. Two giant badgers. Sorry, I didn't see the other one. Two giant badgers. One appears to be a man badger, one appears to be a lady badger.
We're going to get you.
I wonder if I could have a nice espresso.
Oh, of course, yes.
Can I have one that'll sharpen my senses? Kind of like everything I see changes as soon as I see it because I've had the espresso.
Wow, that's a tall order. Yeah.
Espresso normally does that. I think it'll be all right. Single, please, yes. Double is too much. I'd see far too much in far too many ways.
Do you know, the espresso is definitely helping. The world is sliding into sharp focus. But this festival's so big, I'm quite daunted, to be honest. I need someone to give me advice on how to get started. And I know just the person.
Thing that everyone's got in common in Glastonbury and do a poem about it, and I was just trying to work it out. It can be very confusing trying to work out what everyone...
Right, I've arrived. I'm peering past a red vinyl curtain into the dark of the Poetry and Words tent. It's always good to get a feel for the venue. It looks frightening and welcoming at the same time, like poetry itself. Oh, what a treat! It's Murray Lachlan Young's turn on stage.
Soon you'll seek me urgently for to set you free. Wattle on your tippy toes.
I'm going to go and wait for Murray out the back because he said he's got a poem for us inspired by a musician, so let's see what he's unearthed.
We shall meet again.
Well, I mean, I've got my Keith Richards poem, but I have to give a tiny intro. It marks the 10th anniversary of Keith Richards from the Rolling Stones falling out of a coconut tree on South Pacific Island and ending up with what Mick Jagger described as a hot hole in his head. And he appeared outside a London hospital wearing what appeared to be three leather berets stacked one on the other, doing a Benny Hill salute, which is obviously not good enough for a rock star of his calibre in all senses of the word. So it's good, if you're going to go, Keith, don't do it like that. So what the hell did you think you were doing? So blind that you just couldn't see? Not a thought for your legion of worshipping fans when you shinned up the trunk of that coconut tree. Because if you're going to go, Keith, go. And if you're going to go, Keith, go. And if you're going to go, Keith, go. But don't do it like that, Keith. No, Keith, no. Go in the middle of a hard blues riff. Go at the end of a smacked-up spliff, a speedball death plunge, Learjet smash, a coked-up gunfight, high-speed car crash, coal-black eyes, cracked rock and roll skin with your hand on the fretboard, cigarette grin. Do it like a king pin. Debauchee, but not falling out of a coconut tree. Come on, Keith, man, what did it to you? Who goaded you on? Was it Ronnie Wood that said you should? Or was it Elton John that you tried to prove wrong when he called you King Kong? Did you snag you some wrong? Come on, come on, come on, come on. Keith, baby, tell us what the hell was going on. Because if you're going to go, Keith, go. If you're going to go, Keith, go. Then if you're going to go, Keith, go. But don't do it like that, Keith. No. Keith? No.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
What advice would you give me? Because I've got to, in about an hour, perform a poem in the Poetry and Words tent that I've been trying to write throughout the day. What are the pitfalls, do you think, of having to do something like that?
Well, I think, I mean, in my experience of, I mean, having been resident poet here for BBC Six Music and been cast in the same role of having to find things which will provide novelty, which I think is probably the key to the whole thing, is finding something novel. What I suppose I look for is juxtapositional ideas, so things that wouldn't normally sit together.
Right.
So then what I do is it would take a bunch of things I've observed and then try and put them with the most incongruous partner and then form that into a sentence, then link the sentences and allow the poem to write itself, unless a fabulous premise just drops into one's mind, of course. The pitfall of that, of course, is ending up with a list poem. Mm. And not to say that list poems are bad. I mean, they can be absolutely brilliant, but obviously as a professional poet, if you do list poems all the time, then you know you're not actually doing it properly. But I think we can allow ourselves one every now and again. So I just take all the information and sort of acute close-up observations, big wide observations, and throw them together on a piece of paper. And I think the great line that the lyricist Don Black told me was, it's not in the writing, it's in the rewriting. So as long as you've got something on its feet,
yes,
you've got the bones of a piece together and it looks like a poem, then once that's there, then you can start to go to work on it, as you well know.
To run out of the moon. The paper, the pencil, and me.
I loved Murray's poem. I loved the rhythm of it, from which everything else within it seemed to grow. It seemed to me as though a poem with a strong rhythm would be right for Glastonbury, with all these conflicting sound systems resonating around and through me sensible shoes to me grey quiff, and through the audience. So, Helen Johnson, I know you've curated or stage-managed the poetry tent here at Glastonbury for a while now, and I wonder what you think the music gives to the poets, do you think, in terms of their writing and their performance?
Well, do draw on inspiration from musicians. Of course, you know, some people have very, very tight rhythm structures, which inspired by or flirt with the kinds of rhythms you might get in music. So it's quite a complicated relationship. We had Phil Jupiter, who performs with us as Porky the Poet, on stage yesterday saying poetry and words is the heart of Glastonbury. You know, that poetry is a heart and a soul of Glastonbury, if not the only one. And really, this kind of thing is what makes the festival as well, because it's not just music. It's all these other little things, and things like the poetry are really what make it.
Nobody embodies that powerful Venn diagram overlap of music and poetry more than Kate Tempest, over there on the West Holt stage.
And my gosh, yes, they are cold and listless. They are not quite sure that they even exist here, in this moment, slow and viscous. Their lips are horny.
You can certainly hear the influence of hip-hop in Kate's work, but the big musical story of Glastonbury this year has been its UK-born cousin, grime. We've seen its influence on the generation who grew up with it as part of their musical landscape and who are now coming into their own. Performers like Nadia Rose, debuting on the Park stage. She wouldn't see herself as a grime artist, but grime seems to have given her permission to write in a way that feels true to her own speech. And that's what I want for the poem I'm writing. So I wonder what advice she'd give me as a poet.
Glastonbury, we're having a great time! I love that. I'll tie my squad. Guess who? But you never left. Yes, I did that rose from the dead.
Oh,
and now I need to kill them with flows and some punchlines that'll go
over your head.
Turn back, I'm a caution ahead. I'm your worst nightmare, stood over your bed. So them girl try corn me, but I smell defeat like a hole in your head. Wow, she's sick and she fresh.
There was a time where people from the UK were like rapping with like the US accent and using all these US words that in a general sentence over here they would have never used, and that wasn't allowing us to like be individual, stand out. It's just like, oh, you're just trying to be like them. And yeah, I feel like grime definitely always stuck to being, you know, London and being UK. My grime element would come from like where I'm from, like my environment, and you know, the things that I'm able to spit about. It's a lifestyle, you know, it's just like anything else, where like where you're from is what you represent. Where I'm from is Croydon as the ends.
I was on the scene, had to flee from the hops. I go inside, no
Ian, you have to just release your inner bad girl. Obviously, you're a guy, so it'll be your inner bad guy. That's not like a bad guy in a bad way. That's like when you feel yourself, like, you know, you wake up in the morning and you think, do you know what? I am awesome. I'm actually top notch. And that's it. The bars are going to come flowing out.
That was so great hearing from Nadia. I've been looking for my inner bad guy, but I think I might have left him at Barnsley bus station. I've got to admit, I wish I was awesome at finding my way across Glastonbury. Let's have a look at the map. So now, it's like when you go into a new city and you haven't got your map and you're a bit lost, because I am frankly a bit lost here at Glastonbury. But what appears to be happening is that I'm going down ever smaller, ever tighter streets. It's like when you go to a city and you find yourself in the old town. And you don't quite know where you are. You turn a corner and you end up by a harbour, or you end up by a bus station. And I think that's what's going to happen now. I had a map, but it seems useless. It seems to be reinventing itself as I walk, so that as I walk, ahead of me, new roads are springing up, new tents are springing up. People who weren't here before are actually here now. I'm about to enter the green future. I quite like the idea of a green future. What I do like as well, it's green futures, not just one. There's going to be more than one green future. I hope I find number 24.
Do you know, even if you've never performed or played a musical instrument, it feels very welcoming here. It's the kind of place where you can reinvent yourself, I ring. Do you know, I've always wanted to play the ukulele. And here's a stall selling them.
Can I just have a quick go on a ukulele?
Yeah,
I can't
please.
Play it, but I'll have a go.
I can teach you how to play it.
Can you? Oh,
yeah.
Good.
It takes 10 seconds to learn.
Fantastic.
Get your third finger.
Yes.
You're going to go 1, 2, 3, third fret.
Yes.
And strum all the strings down.
Okay. Here I am at Glastonbury having a right good time. Here I am at Glastonbury making my words rhyme. Here I am at Glastonbury, this isn't much like grime. Here I am at Glastonbury, in fact, it's a bit of a crime.
Wow, mixing grime with Formby.
Yeah, not bad, eh? Grime Formby. So, the thing about ukuleles is, perhaps it's because they're small, they just make you smile, don't they? They just make you happy. Make me happy, anyway.
Grime Formby. I like the ring of my new persona. I could be leaning on a grime post at the corner of the street. But I need to know more about what it might mean for my poetry. I found an old friend of the programme at the Poetry and Words tent, Debree Stevenson, a Verb New Voice of 2011, and she really knows what she's talking about when it comes to the grime-poetry interface.
Mum loves God and rules, her youth gasping for them rules. But kids question rules, abuse calls for fight. Or rules. Pass, pass, pass it on. Pass, pass, pass it on. Pass, pass, pass it on. Pass your trauma till it's gone. Like, mum was the oldest, stayed home to clean sibs. Mum has put English school hard to finish. Chalk, no armband, font or pool and feels like quicksand. Bishop shakes hand. I'd rather school. She's sick with kids, but she...
So if you're a poet making poems and performing poems, what language qualities that are in grime would you say were useful for a poet?
There's a couple things. Like, one, in terms of the evolution of the lyricism, so coming over the migration from the Caribbean and sound system culture, and actually the role of the MC. So in a sound clash, them just vocalising and engaging with the audience and getting them involved into the party, the evolution of that dub, jungle, garage. So there is that inherent sense that kind of goes back a bit more to oral tradition, in the sense that it's like trying to really connect with your audience, but also is inherently physical, you know, which is something that I think can so often, you know, as someone that went through the academic system, went through a red brick system, taught at universities, it can just get so de-physicalized and made so academic and in your head. But, you know, poetry, mnemonic techniques are something that live in your body, and grime is something that's evolved from bodies moving and needing to feel free and connected to one another. So I think there's that spirit in it, which is really beautiful and impromptu. But then also just lyrically, in terms of it being very fast at 140 beats per minute, I think it can really allow for some far more choppy flows. So the flows can be very aggressive, very staccato, like it's like very, it's a very fast dance.
So she can rule, she's not evil, but our people, some just sequel, past upheaval, she chokes it all up, kids don't call up. She says they cruel, but mum is the daughter of a Jew's daughter, of a war's daughter. She has one daughter, never hit her. She picks her jewels, daughter's boldness, real world's coldness, but we're daughters, gods or daughters, gag traumas. This mum's fuel. Is that cool?
What I like about a poet like Debris is that she really engages her audience, and her physical presence is so important. It picks the words up and pushes them out into the air. We'll be hearing more from her when we record at Hull as part of the Contained Strong Language Festival in the autumn. You can find the link to the tickets on our website, and they'll be on sale from the end of July. Talking of physical, there's a bit of physical theatre going on over here. It's a lifeguard with no pool. What's that all about, Glastonbury?
No kidding, lady. Yes, mate.
Yeah. Can you talk to me through your megaphone?
If you like.
Would that be better, wouldn't it?
This is going to get really loud.
Oh, good. I like it like that. So.
Well, this might hurt, mate.
No, it's fine.
I'm all about hurting people on the road, you know what I mean?
What's your job here, sir?
I thought I was bleeding obvious, mate. I'm saving life.
So, have you saved any yet?
Unfortunately, no.
Well, that's a shame.
Well, I'm not very good. I didn't say I was very good, mate. Did you have any pay here?
What would be the best way to save a life in this little space here? How would you
well,
do it?
I like to point the roar of the pool out to people, but no running, no jumping, no diving in the deep end, and especially no petting rule. And preventing life, I really come down hard on the no petting rule. I find that's the best way of preventing life.
The programme that we're doing is a poetry programme. I find that you've got a certain rhythm, a certain poetic rhythm
right.
in the way you speak. Do you feel yourself as a kind of megaphone poet? I think that's what you are.
Well, it might be a megaphone poet, might be a megaphone insert rude swear word here, you know what I mean? It depends on your viewpoint. I mean, all I do all day long is try and save lives. Like the likes of this fella here, look at him, he's coming into a pool laden down. He's got all his gear on. Listen, mate, I could save your life, but you haven't washed in 3 days, so there's no way I'm giving you the kiss of life, mate. You know what I mean?
As you walk past the various stalls selling more eatables than you could ever eat, I'm going to go under the Rise Up arch and head into the green fields, which is where you might call it the fringe of the fringe happens. I'm hoping to meet people here who I might not normally meet in my normal everyday life. People playing ukuleles, singing songs from Disney films, that kind of thing is what you like. So this is kind of, for many people, the spirit of Glastonbury here. It's not the huge bands, it's the tiny stages and this sense that actually, as I keep thinking, this could be an alternative way of living your life, based around ukuleles and men waving fold-up chairs. That's all you need in your life in some ways, I think. So there's some lovely slogans here. To know and not to do is not to know. Align your focus with the solution, not with the problem. Any fool can make a rule and any fool will mind it. A different world cannot be built by indifferent people. On one level, they're just slogans. On one level, they're heightened language. But nice to just look over there and see beneath them lots of handprints that people have painted. So you do get a sense of optimism here. I think, to be true to the spirit of Glastonbury this year, my poem is going to be about utopia. And the kind of utopia that a festival like this might inspire. Do you mind if I ask you about this beautiful garden?
Yeah.
What are these that you're just doing now?
Teasels.
Teasels.
I always make the arch that you come in at
quite
low.
So you have to bend your way in?
You bend and then you just
Can I go into the garden, is that
all
right?
Yeah, of course you can.
This is me bending into the garden via the arch. As you walk through, you ring little bells. She's right, the actual act of bending into the garden. It's like that moment when you lean forward into a poem. You know, when you're looking at your book and you're reading a poem you haven't read before, and too many people stand up to the poem, but actually to lean into the poem, if the poem is a garden. That's just like that, and you walk in, and then you walk under a lovely triangle of wind chimes. And to stand underneath it is to feel that you've achieved some kind of
Utopia or Nirvana to stand under wind chimes. You see, normally, on a suburban street, I would say, what time is it by the wind chimes? Why, it's irritating o'clock. But here, in this beautiful place, in this innocent garden, these wind chimes, they fill you with a kind of love, a kind of odd love. I think there was something in that espresso, you know, because I just feel so happy standing here. I'm going to stand here forever.
But you know what? I can't do that. I've got a poem to write, but now I know I have to get the word topiary into my utopia poem in honour of this beautiful garden. It's a utopiary. What's brilliant about Glastonbury is that you find people preparing to perform, not just performing. Now, over here, you can hear Catherine Williams rehearsing a song from a new album which is based on Laura Barnett's novel Greatest Hits. And I'm glad she's singing a track called When Morning Comes, because it's got the most beautiful refrain. And I want to put a refrain into my Glastonbury poem.
When morning comes, I will reach for you. When morning comes, I call you. When morning comes, I will throw off the darkness.
Ah, the glamour of showbiz. That's why we do it. Hey, in a porter cabin. That's such a beautiful song, Catherine, and what you seem to be so great at, it seems to me, is just making these resonant phrases.
I really enjoy the simplicity of when you want to say I love you to someone, you don't say it in metaphors and stuff. It has to be powerful and simple.
Because a refrain isn't quite a chorus. It's simply a kind of nudge or a reminder or a thing. I always say it's like a wave on a beach, a refrain, where you're sitting on the beach and maybe the verse is coming over your feet, but then every so often the refrain comes. And yeah. What's your advice on writing a refrain?
It's almost like walking into a different room or thinking of something and then a new idea popping in. And it sort of has to lift you just enough to get to the next barrier, but then also not be far enough so that you can drop back into the next part of the song.
So unlike a chorus, which will actually be a kind of, this is the wrong word, a kind of interruption, then a refrain is simply a kind of beckoning in and saying, there's more in a minute.
Yeah, well, I mean, a refrain and a chorus for me often feel like the same things, but they're like brothers to me. So one brother is just a little bit more polite and gentlemanly, and then the other one goes straight for the bar and swears.
I have lived with for too long. I will listen, listen, listen to your song. To your song.
In the middle of the mayhem that is Glastonbury, we find a pond of tranquility, where if I look closely into it, I can not only see myself reflected, but I can see the world reflected. That's the thing about Glastonbury, it reflects the world back at you. So I can see myself, the waving flags, the people walking by, but actually, behind them, some idea of utopia, which may just be a reflection of yourself in a still pond. I don't know. Somebody's thrown a 10p into the pond, not understanding the non-capitalist ethos of Glastonbury. I'll just get that 10p.
I've been sitting here backstage at Poetry in Words, struggling with this poem for about 30 minutes now. I'm trying to get the word topiary in, but topiary is really hard to get into a poem, let me tell you, writers of poetry. It's really hard to write to order, like we're asking listeners who enter the Proms Poetry Competition to do. Oh, I can see on stage now is a poet who looks at things differently. It's Rowan McCabe. He goes door to door in the northeast, writing poems to order. I'm going to see what he thinks.
Now, Rowan, I've been wandering about trying to find inspiration for this poem that I'm writing about utopia. And it is becoming simply a selection of different ways of saying the word utopia. So have you got any advice or perhaps a poem that you could help me with?
Well, I don't know. I can't think of something that should be in the world, but I can think of something that shouldn't.
Oh,
is that
right?
Any good?
Yes, it is.
Right. Okay, so, goes like this. All the world's creatures are perfect, and each has their own special gift, from seals on the beaches to black slimy leeches. We need them all here to exist, because the fabric of life is close woven, and everything's bound up together. You pull one thing out, all the rest could fall down like a natural tower of Jenga. Without spiders, there'd be loads of maggots. Without wolves, all the deer overtake. Yes, each creature is critical, except one individual. I'm talking, of course, about snakes. Oh, snakes. Oh, snakes, those cold-blooded killers. They're scaly and hated by everything else. They even begin to shed off their skin when they can't stand the sight of themselves. I'm sure, you know, snakes swallow food whole. They're able to unhinge the jaw. Do you know why they do it? They could easily chew it. It's just their way of saying, up yours. There's some that say snakes can be friendly and sleep with a python in bed. You can't go to the home or reach them by phone because all of those people are dead. Oh, snakes, they abandon their eggs. They can't even be nice to survive. Don't doubt the persona. Just look at a cobra. You only see hate in his eyes. From huge anacondas to thread snakes, put every last one on a plane and have Samuel Jackson fly up and gas them. No one will ever complain.
Fantastic. Yes, you're right. We don't need any snakes in our utopia at all. You know what? That's been really helpful, because sometimes it's a relief to know what you can leave out when you're writing. No snakes. And to think about the very opposite of what you're writing about. I'm outside the homeopathic clinic, and it's a kind of dystopia rather than a utopia, because you could get hangovers, sunburn, aches, pains, injuries, bangs, sprains, bruises, burns, exhaustion, bites, stings, ailments from mud, crying babies, feel homesick, hay fever and shock. But that's all right, because this homeopathic tent will cure you of them all. It's like dystopia to utopia in 5 yards. I've just bumped into Winston and his random poetry generator, which is, as far as I can see, an upside-down bike with the word spoken word on it. So, Winston, tell me how it works.
It is indeed. It's originally a 1920s New Hudson bicycle.
Right.
Adapted by me to be the world's first random poetry-generated bicycle, and possibly last, I may add. But hang on, health and safety at all times. Before we have a go, we'll ring the bell, and I'll get the wheels in motion for us, and maybe we'll make a line of poetry between us.
Ooh, yes, I hope so.
So, if you come round this side, sir,
yes,
and place your foot with a nice firm press on the back wheel right there. You've stopped the back wheel, and if we go back round,
yes,
you'll see that we've chosen a word. The word we've chosen is dancing.
Dancing.
And so now the second part of the process with the front wheel, on the front brake there, sir. Well done. And dancing and...
Circus.
Circus, I believe. So we'll put
that's
those...
That's nice, dancing circus.
A combination never seen before on the random word generator.
So it's like a... This is like what the surrealists used to do, isn't it?
It is. Zara would have loved this.
Yes.
He would have been off on it.
It would have been.
So we've got two words, dancing and circus. And what I've been doing during the festival is taking people's lines, not poems, but lines, where they've added one or two words to these two, or a whole host of words. And I've taken those lines and made a poem for the Poetry and Words blog every day,
yes,
which has gone up online. So could we think of something to add to those, dancing and circus?
I've been trying to think about how Glastonbury is a kind of utopia.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that Glastonbury is a dancing circus. So could begin with that. Glastonbury is a dancing circus.
I think that's great.
Everybody goes berserkers and the flags are all unfurled.
Wonderful.
It struck me that rhyme is good for this kind of thing, because rhyme always helps you to think when you're generating things.
Yeah. So we can maybe, well, I can maybe in my spare time later, blend that line into all the others I've collected this morning. And you'll see the results on the Poetry and Words blog for a whole year.
Fantastic.
Lovely to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Do you know, I've got to admit, I've reached a bit of a block. It's just not coming. There are certain words in there that just don't seem to fit, but then when you cross them out, you think you might want them back again. I always forget that editing is the bit where the hard work of a poem is really done, but it's just not coming easily to me today. I'm going to look for some advice from singer and songwriter Lisa Hannigan, who's about to bring her bespoke and beautifully formed lyricism to the park stage. Lisa, I don't often suffer from writer's block. I find that I can normally write, but I'm finding the pressure of having to write a poem about Glastonbury that's going to be performed later on quite difficult. So I thought I'd turn to a songwriter for advice. So what's your advice of how to get yourself going as a songwriter? If you find yourself stuck, what do you tend to do?
Well, I got really stuck when I was making my last record and I just didn't know what to do. And I asked all of my friends, just as you're doing now. And the first thing was, it was refreshing how every one of them said, oh, yes, I know what that's like. You know, that was comforting in itself, that it obviously is something that happens to everyone. But the thing that helped me was, you know, I felt like I just didn't have a word in my head. I felt like my language had sort of dried up somewhat. So I actually just started rereading Seamus Heaney's poetry from the beginning. I have all of his books in a lovely box set. And I felt like if I could just sort of nourish that sort of part of my brain, you know, to have that sort of fruitful language where it just starts making your brain stretch laterally. Also, tea, maybe some whiskey.
So it's the idea that somehow your language allotment has dried up, but simply by using the words as a kind of watering can in your language allotment, just to help the words to grow again.
Fertiliser.
Yeah, fertiliser.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, Seamus Heaney, I feel like it's sort of, you know, the fossil fuel for your creative brain. It's a richness, and I think a lot of the time when you have writer's block, it's that you just feel sort of slightly empty, or it's just not fertile ground, you know. And it's just simply that I wouldn't reference them directly, although I did set one of his poems to music, but it's more about feeling within the beauty of language again.
Days of clear water, the first hill in the world, where springs washed into the shiny grass and darkened cobbles in the bay.
That really is a voice that's full of light, and where light itself seems to reflect language. It's an amazing skill. Interesting, as you walk along, people sing as they go by, but also there's a kind of visual equivalent of singing as you go by, which is that the floor is carpeted with glitter. Glitter has fallen from people's clothing, like we've had some kind of disco wedding. Talking of disco, the dream of many performers is to become a Glastonbury cult, and that's what I'd like to do with my poem today. I'd like to have the cult following of a man called Lecky Doe. Lecky Doe grew up in a party-loving Ghanaian home in London. He's got a great love of disco and high life. He's classically trained, but unusually, perhaps uniquely, he says that his whole act is inspired by the fact that the lobsters of the world have chosen him to be their lord. And on their behalf, he spreads lobster love.
And who knows, we may even disco. Today we're stepping out of our hotel location.
And if this wasn't enough, I reckon one of the things that sets him apart is the lobster actions that go alongside his song and his wonderful catchphrase, pinchy, pinchy, kiss, kiss. It beats Welcome to the Verb.
We may even disco. Thank you.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I love deliciously.
That is, though. Somehow you've, in the writing and in the singing, you've captured joy. We can't see the actions on the radio, but actions are such a big part of what you do. So could you show me the actions and I'll describe what you're doing?
Okay.
So this, there's a, both hands are coming up doing a kind of lobster click. These are the lobster claws, which make the noise. They're going up one hand at a time. I'm mirroring what's happening here, so we do that.
Last night
we're doing the thumbs behind us to show where we've been.
While you were sleeping.
We're still asleep like this. We've got the hands like that.
We were dancing.
Oh, we're dancing while other people are sleeping.
By the deep blue sea.
Were you ever tempted to actually dress up as a lobster? Come on, look it like a lobster.
No, because they chose me as their lord.
Yes, of course. I keep forgetting. You're the lobster. Yeah, silly me.
So I'm the lord of the lobsters.
Yes.
Spreader of lobster love.
Do you think this will be forever? Will you ever change to any other? It's up to them, isn't it, I suppose?
It's up to them, yeah. I mean, it's an honour, you wouldn't turn it down. I'm not going to anywhere.
So if, I don't know, if some ibex or snails...
I'll speak to the lobsters. I tell them I'll speak to the lobsters.
What piece of advice would you give if I'm trying to become a cult here at Glastonbury?
Be true to yourself. And wherever you go, remember, many are called, few are frozen. And I'm thinking of you. Pinchy, pinchy, kiss, kiss.
OK, so now I need to work on my utopian hand actions. A kind of open palm gesture of acceptance. A raised thumb. A cheery wave.
We got Gandhi's flip-flop. Non-violent curries for the civilly disobedient. Sounds good. I think I might have some that later on. Although other flip-flops are available. If I wore flowers in my hair, walking down the street, people would point and laugh. But here, you can wear flowers in your hair, and it's a good thing, and there's nothing wrong with it. I think I might take it up.
Right, I'm back at the Poetry and Words tent now, because not only is it nearly time for me to perform, Glastonbury's website poet in residence, Dominic Berry, is about to go on stage.
Okay. I want to hear poetry that'll make you feel merry. Make some noise as we welcome Mr. Dominic Berry. Raise it up, a hoop and a holler for Coco Brown. Yeah! Dominic Berry!
Now, Dominic, you're a poet in residence here at this year's Glastonbury Festival, and I'm looking for a kind of utopia here. You're going to read us a poem that's got some things that's happened at Glastonbury. Could any of those be said to be utopian?
I do not think there is a single person who goes to Glastonbury who does not go home saying, I wish this was life all the time. I think it's amazing how quickly very deep relationships are formed here. It's just such a special, magical place. I would say utopian. I know that I absolutely have loved every sleep-deprived second of it.
Let's hear the poem.
It is 5 in the morning. Two people feel neck skin prickles under soft summer solstice sunrise deep in a Glastonbury mosh pit. As bass lines boom through thousands of bouncing feet, all searching for a place to stand, two people find love and peace. Keisha shares water with Kaz, spilling laughter. It is Keisha's first festival, so she carries enough smiles to inspire a nation. Can repeat lineup times like children recite times tables. Has drawn routes to stages on backs of hands like maps on pages of folklore fables. Grin soaked. Kaz drinks this water and decides, forget the office. Being with Keisha means more to Kaz than team-building workmates who knock down dreams. Kaz and Keisha met 5 minutes ago, and now their friendship is deeper than time. Here, they found exactly where they'll stand. From pitching tents to their first band, from raves to campaigns of goodwill, from folks all chill to jokes that thrill, from protest art of paint and steel to juggled flames and healing fields, from Pilton Palais to the Glade, from Oxfam to Greenpeace to Water Aid. Imagine if Kaz and Keisha's feelings could be bottled and shared, make our thirsty nations drunk on love. Cheers refueled at the mosh pit stop. Hope charging under shared sunbeams. Excited minds dripping with dreams.
Wow, that's fantastic. God, what a wonderful, wonderful poem. I'll tell you what, you've located then the utopia of the mosh pit.
So yeah.
Within that mosh pit, there's all these things happening and relationships forming, but also the mosh pit as the temporary space from which all kinds of things can grow.
Most definitely. It's a beautiful moment for sure.
They've got a two-piece. I think I'm nearly there now. These last lines are really hard. I've only got a couple of minutes till my performance, but I don't know how to end the poem. From my vantage point over here at Poetry and Words, I've been watching Mick Artistic mesmerise his audience at the Sensation Seeker stage, partly through his outsider artist persona that's both surreal and brilliantly matter-of-fact. He has no trouble signing off.
Now you be careful. You're good tripping up. Get them laces sorted. You're a big fella. It's a long way down. Thank you very much. That's called Audience Interaction 1. This is it.
I'm writing this poem about Glastonbury that's about utopia. So have you got any advice on a good way to finish a poem? Because I think part of the thing with performance is the finish.
Just put a full stop on the end of it, I think. Mm. That's it, really.
Yeah, not let it fade away.
No, just do it. Chop it. I mean, some of my stuff, it only lasts about 15 seconds, and that's enough. I think, well, you don't have to have sort of verse, chorus. You know, you can have, like, three lines. You're like, whatever you do, don't blow up the chip shop, because it's all we've got in the way of fast food.
That's all you need.
I mean, you know, and a full stop.
Thanks, mate.
Finish backstage. I had some chips and gravy.
Oh, it's time for me to go on. Wish me luck, and I hope my quest for something to unlock writer's block here today at Glastonbury has helped if you're entering the Proms Poetry Competition. We want a poem of up to 25 lines inspired by a piece of music at this year's Proms. There are two categories, 12 to 18 and 19 and above, and I can't wait to read your poems. I'd love to chat more, but it's time for me to take to the stage here at Glastonbury. And I'll see you all again in the autumn for a brand new verb season.
Can you start the applause at 1 out of 10? Excellent. Now can you do 5.5 out of 10? Now 1 million out of 10. I want to welcome to the stage the very fantastic Ian McMillan!
Thank you very much. My name's Ian McMillan. I've written a poem especially for this wonderful utopia of Glastonbury. This has got people can join in with. When I say utopia, you say utopia. When I say trutopia, you say trutopia. It carries on like that. Let's practice that bit. Utopia.
Utopia.
Trutopia.
Trutopia.
It carries on like that for 500 verses. Let's start. When I think about Glastonbury, what I think is utopia.
Utopia.
Trutopia.
Trutopia.
Glastopia.
Glastopia.
Hoptopia.
Hoptopia.
I feel the urgent music of the words knocking on me tent in the morning. Sentences slipping to me sleeping bag. Write their letters on the dawn. Grimetopia.
Rhymetopia.
Rhymetopia. Poemtopia.
Verbtopia.
Verbtopia. This is a temporary city of brand new thinking. Words meet music, shake hands and dance. In the Somerset sky, the sun is shining. We're all waking up from a year-long trance. Utopia.
Utopia.
Trutopia.
Trutopia.
Glastopia.
Glastopia.
Hoptopia.
Grimetopia.
Grimetopia. I want to carve Glastonbury on a privet hedge like the one that belongs to me Uncle Reg. Utopia.
Utopia.
Well, I think that went very well. The young people and the old people in the audience seemed to enjoy it, and we did seem to get a sense of utopia. I felt towards the end that I might actually step out and crowd surf, but then as I was about to do it, I saw people leaning back in horror, which wasn't the kind of utopia I want. So I think what we've got there is a great utopia. What a wonderful thing. Glastonbury, utopia, the verb. What more could anybody ever want?
Utopia!
Utopia.
Yes, utopia.
Utopia!
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for listening to this week's Verb Download. I think you'll agree that those 45 minutes were an example of how life should be lived. Listen again next week.